Roxo Media House.
Welcome back to Fortitude, folks. Today is a special one. I am sitting in the presence of a guy I've known for a long time, a man named Rusty Reed. Welcome to the show, Rusty.
Thanks, JW.
Fortitude is brought to you by the folks at Captex Bank. Thank you, Mike Thomas. We know you're watching out there every day religiously, so thank you for your time and your sponsorship. But Rusty, he's here today for a lot of reasons, particularly one big one. Higginbotham, his company that he's been running for so long, is turning 75 years old. Happy birthday, Hig.
Thank you. There we go.
But before we get into the juicy stuff, let's talk about you a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Your childhood. Where were you born?
So I was born in, born in Baylor Hospital in Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
Tell, you know, I know we're in Fort Worth, so I have to be careful about that.
Fair enough. Tell us a little bit about your childhood, if you don't mind.
Sure.
What you can tell us.
Yeah, so sure, happy to. So, born in Dallas, have a little brother, Brian, that I grew up with, who's kind of my sidekick. Like many people, unfortunately, my folks ended up getting divorced at a pretty young age. I think it was like 9, but grew up living over in an area called Medallion Shopping Center. And so back in the old days, where I went to the same elementary school, Dandy Rogers, for 7 years, and then they kind of shipped us over to what was at the time called Ben Franklin Junior High. Same building turned into the freshman Hillcrest Center, so right. I went there, and then Hillcrest High School. So anyhow, long story short, kind of spent all my informative years in Dallas, and was actually headed to University of Texas, which as much as I loved the Longhorns, I'm glad I had a little diversion, kind of a sad story, but nevertheless, I'm not the only fall in this category. So get accepted, go to UT, and unfortunately my dad passes away. My folks were divorced, but dad passes away, so my grandparents encouraged me to stay close to home. So I thought, well, I'll just go to SMU, and they quickly explained to me that that wasn't in the budget. Now, the JW, the comical part about this is I paid for my own way to go through school. So I guess when you're young, you don't kind of connect those dots. But I had a bunch of great friends of mine going to North Texas. And so I kind of followed that train to UNT, or at that time, North Texas State University, which, by the way, headed to Vegas, I don't know if you noticed, to play in a little NIT semifinal.
Yes, I did.
Went to North Texas and really kind of set the trajectory of my life, which actually ultimately brought me to Higginbotham. So I met my wife there, Molly, who we've been married for quite some time, since 1985.
Right. Let me check my notes, Rusty. Checks out.
I got the dates right.
Yes.
One of my colleagues today was a fraternity brother, guy named Ed Coker, when he was moving on for graduation to go work for a company called American General down in Houston. He worked for an agency there in Denton called Raymond King & Menace, and because I was still paying for my schooling, he encouraged me to take that job, and I was like, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so really a great mentor of mine was a gentleman named Terrell King, and he was one of the principals. And so I got to work there kind of the junior year, half a junior year, and all my senior year. And then upon graduation, he was very generous with his time and made a point to line me up with really 3 different job opportunities, which I landed on at American General. And that's what led me to Houston.
Sure.
So I worked down there upon graduation. And then I was in our industry, they have kind of industry conferences based on the Independent Insurance Agents of Texas. And so I was working the conference, trying to get independent agents and brokers to sell our product. And the president of American General at that time, a guy named J.D. White, came to me and said, you know, I'd love to have you come back to the Metroplex, because I know that's where your home was, and don't have a spot for you in Dallas, but I have a spot for you in Fort Worth. And I said, of course, naturally, yes, sir, I'm happy to take that on. And he said, if you mess it up, you're going to Baton Rouge. So it kind of became my motivation to certainly do well. And so I came to Fort Worth, and my job was to build out this market. And the gentleman that I became very fond of was a fellow named Bill Stroud, who was the nephew of Paul Higginbotham, the founder of Higginbotham, and he encouraged me to join the business, and I did that December of 86, and as I like to say, the rest is history. So,
and before we get a little further into Higginbotham, so you said you helped pay for school by work, or you paid for school by your own efforts. Was this selling insurance for the original, or what were you doing to pay
so
the bills?
No, so great question. So upon my dad's passing, he had a number of rental properties, and so my little brother and I, as the joke would go, we'd help him work on rental properties, almost as the maintenance guys, the paint guy, whatever it may be. And if we did really well, we got to have a free lunch. And if we did good the second half of the day, we got to have a free dinner. But upon his passing, my other grandfather was in the advertising business, and he knew that I knew how to paint pretty well. And so we created Reed Brothers Painting.
Really?
And so we passed out flyers up and down Montgomery, Mockingbird there in Highland Park, and landed a number of jobs. So putting my way through school, I had the opportunity to paint homes. I had the opportunity to work for National Health Studios up in Denton, who, by the way, was run by now Stacy McDavid. So she was my boss, and we always giggle about that when we see one another. And then I also worked at Ramey King and Menace. So I ultimately, by the time I got close to graduation, I was only working
one job,
thank God.
That's fantastic.
But, yeah.
And so in 86, back to your where you left off, 86, you joined Higginbotham with Mr. Stroud, as you mentioned, as the 12th employee. That's what I have.
Yeah, that's right. Note. Yeah.
So obviously it's a small company at that point. Only a few years, short few years later, in 3 years, in fact, you were 27 years old and you were named CEO, president of Higginbotham, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Please, for those that know you, and you know a lot of folks in this town, and everybody says really nice things about you, I assume you know that. You're a really nice, wonderful guy. But how does one become a CEO at such an early age of such a young company? What steps led to that, if you mind
me asking? I wish Bill was around. He had a lot of faith and confidence in me, obviously. So it's probably important to note that the training that I received when I was at American General was really very thorough, and I remember one of my other colleagues at Higginbotham used to say, because I'd always go to him and go, "Why me? I'm so young." And he'd say, "Rusty, you know, when you talk about experience, you have guys that have 30 years experience, but it's just 1 year over and over and over again." He said, "You're newer to the industry, but your experience is rather robust and it's full."
Sure.
And so when I was actually brought into Higginbotham, Bill had two underwriting programs, one with a company called Crum & Forster and one called Providence, Washington. And so my job was really to oversee that program. So we, at that time, important to note, we were a tiny company, but my job was to actually oversee the business insurance side of the agency, which, you know, was probably represented about 65% of that.
Right.
And he very quickly, I mean, and it's kind of my leadership style as well. I mean, he very quickly let me just kind of grabbed the baton, and I ran that. And then I kind of learned an early lesson. I had a one of the sales guys I kind of had a little a spat with, is the nice way to put it. And I went in his office almost to be a little bit of a tattletale. And he very quickly reminded me that when I had numbers by my name, I was producing, not just overhead, I could come in and have a much louder voice. And so because of my training that I had, I really then kind of launched. I thought, you know what, I can run this side of the business, but I'm going to actually go sell. And really, probably my fondest day is when I passed this guy, because he was the largest sales guy at the time. And so I think really the accumulation of my product knowledge, the fact that I had really already run the largest part of our organization, and then on top of that, I was leading the firm in sales. I think it kind of became a decision that, and it was his call, because he owned 100% of the company, but he was also, and I'll digress a second. I mean, you know, in life, it's always great to have great mentors. And when I reflect back on my life, and I'm not that old, you know, as you were there, I mean, they say 60 is the new 40, so I'm only 40. But when I reflect back on my life, I've had some very, very wonderful mentors, from Terrell King at Ramey King and Menace to J.D. White at American General, and then Bill. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had a lot of great mentorship to help me.
Yes,
once I was past that baton to run the firm, it was very, very helpful. And, you know, I'd never bought a company either. And so that's the other thing that we did in 89, kind of in conjunction with me being anointed as the president and CEO, that I had the good fortune of signing my name on the dotted line, which I still laugh about this today, because I think I was, Molly and I were renting an apartment at Highland Park Apartments, mm-hmm. and we were leasing a Volvo. So it wasn't like I had any assets to pledge.
Right.
But as Bill Adams, who was our banker at First City at the time, said, well, no, if this thing fails, I'm going to own you for life. So I guess it gave me plenty of motivation to get after it. But, you know, we bought the company through a vehicle called an ESOP, employee mm-hmm. stock ownership plan and trust. And it was great for Bill and what he deserved. It was great for us as the buyers,
right.
But more broadly, culturally, and it's really kind of who we are today as well. It allowed me to, you know, I'm just a very loyal person. You know this because our personal relationship, and I really believe you dance with the ones who brung you. And I was sitting there thinking about, you know, we explored all kinds of ways to buy Higginbotham. You know, at the time, Bill was on the board of Bank of Commerce, and we went down and met with them to see maybe that I just would, he'd co-sign a note. And when that note was paid off, I'd own the company.
Mm-hmm.
And that, that didn't sound like a good solution to me for a couple reasons. Number one, if I was the 12th employee, excluding Bill, there was 10 others that had been there before me, mm-hmm. and it just didn't feel right. You know, they were there getting that firm from, you know, Bill when he took over to where it was when I walked in, and so I didn't like that, truth be told. And of course, the ESOP meant everybody was going to own the mm-hmm. company, so that was a great solution. And then the other thing that I saw in my, you know, short time, a couple of years with American General, was that if you didn't have ownership in the agency, oftentimes if, you know, the guy in the corner owned it and you're their top sales guy, you just pack your bags up and you'd start your own company and become a competing firm, right?
Right.
And so I thought, if we're going to, A, retain the people we've got, but more importantly, attract people and then have people stay with us.
Give them some
We need to give them ownership.
I think that's one of the things that I love about the company is that it's employee owned. I think you talked about, if I could digress for one second.
Please.
Your sales style. It's very clear you're very good at selling things, and that's one of your secrets to your success. What makes you, would you say, a good salesman in this world?
So I think that's a great question, and I always advise my young people, because I'm now 40, I'm probably one of the younger, but here's just the fact of any industry. I think you can have great people skills, and you'll do okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can be very technical, and you'll be okay. I learned kind of early on, you need to bring those together in the middle. And so I've always prided myself on really being a student of the industry, being very technically proficient, but also to mirror with that, you know, people skills, right?
Sure.
And that's not hard, right? You're being a male, I'm always want to be a gentleman. I want to be mm-hmm. very respectful. I want to certainly, if I say I'm going to do something, by God, I'm going to follow through and
yes,
do
sir.
It. I think what people know about me is that if I commit, I'm all in. I'm mm-hmm. not just going to, you know, go haphazard at it. And I'm naturally very competitive, unlike you and my son Charlie and even Jake. And I mean, I was athletic, but I wasn't certainly going to play at the next level.
Sports? Why you mention that?
Football and mm-hmm. Also was a pole vaulter, believe
okay.
it or not. So I kind of got to do those two sports and love both of them. My problem is, I'll digress a second. I went in practice at Hillcrest. I happened to go up against a guy that was 6'6", a guy named Ricky Bolden, that went on to be part of the Pony Express and a very successful career with the Cleveland Browns. And then one of our competing teams we played against always was Thomas Jefferson, and they had a little guy named Michael Carter, mm-hmm. who went on, of course, to have not only be a wildly successful football player at SMU, and I think went on to the Chicago Bears, but he also was a world-class shot putter.
In the Olympics.
I actually spent a lot of time with him because SMU was so close to Hillcrest. They were generous enough to let a lot of the ISD kids go there and work out. So when I pole vaulted, I actually went there to practice because we didn't have that facility. And, of course, it amazes me this day thinking about Michael Carter literally as a high schooler mm-hmm. was out shot putting all the guys at SMU.
Absolutely.
You know? So, but anyhow.
Yes, another thing that's lovely about Higg is that this is one of the things I've heard and I've read several times, but it's a single source service model, which I think you've told me this yourself, but you want, and I think that means, just so we're get this right, everything that you would ever need for an insurance needs should come through one person, one place. Is that kind of what a single service
that's,
model?
J-Dub, perfect. Yeah, and I'll tell you, I mean, I'm the one here on the mic today, but you know, it takes a village to build what we've built, and it's certainly early days, you know, which are still very much part of who mm-hmm. we are today. You know, we early on, as I began to get more in the client facing side of the business, I had people coming to me going, "Don't you have somebody that does benefits?" And candidly, I did not at the time. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful person, a guy named John Park, who was with Time Insurance, and he kept pounding me, "Listen, I can help you, you know, broaden your business and do employee benefits." And so I took him up on his offer, and we landed a couple of wonderful accounts, and I very quickly picked up the phone and called my pledge brother and dear friend Jim Hubbard, who at the time was working for New York Life, and said, "Jim, I think the demand is really here." I said, "I think we're sitting on a gold mine. We're predominantly a property casualty firm, and people are really wanting us to kind of manage other parts of their business." At that time, we did their business insurance and then their personal, think auto, home, right, that kind of thing. And so we added that line of business. And then shortly after him joining me in April of 89, and we buy the business in June of 89, along comes Michael Parks, who was actually one of my first social friends. And mm-hmm. Michael was working for Connecticut Mutual. And so what they kind of started originally, we called our life and health department, which became a nice bolt on. And we very quickly found that clients really did. We kind of thought about, and back to my kind of technical side, mm-hmm. you know, you can't be a jack of all trade and a master of none in our industry, because you're managing people's assets, their health care, potentially their estate planning, et cetera. And so that really kind of broadened our efforts. And both of them were life insurance guys, but then they even came and said, "Hey, we need to have life insurance experts." And then they found themselves working on retirement plans, and they're like, "We need to get retirement plan mm-hmm. experts in here," predominantly for 401k, but, you know, other retirement vehicles. And then, you know, it broadened, and it's like, you know, a lot of these clients need HR support, right? Most mid-market companies, which we kind of define, you know, 10 employees to really 2,000, you know, oftentimes you play a very active role in kind of being an extension of their bench, right? Mm-hmm. And so we added HR, and then we had clients coming to us going, "Hey, we need help with loss control to make sure we have safe work environments." And so we very quickly began to broaden our scope and provide a lot of ancillary services, right, like loss prevention, and brought attorneys on staff to help do not only risk mitigation, but to help do contract review and claims adjusters and wellness people, and. So really, I would tell you what's been a fun thing to watch from my seat is just we do a great job of listening really what clients need, and then just saying, because we're privately held, you know, we're like, okay, what can we do to best surround the client? And hence became the single source model, right? Absolutely. We put the client in the middle, build professional disciplines around that client, so we could, so they know they could come to us, but we could be their single source as it related to their insurance, financial services, and HR needs, if you will.
Sure.
And that's kind of been our model, you know, really from the get-go. We've just kind of expanded those services.
Absolutely.
And business offerings.
That's wonderful. For comparison, so when you started in 86 at this 12th employee, till now, How many employees does Higginbotham claim?
Well, that's always a good question because it's always a moving target, but in a positive way, I might add. I think we're close. I think the reported number we like to use now is 2,500. Believe it or not, that does change daily because back in 07, we kind of deployed what I call a dual growth strategy. So we've always grown very much organically. We had a lot of people that wanted to buy us to build out Texas, and you know, we, as I like to say, we may be dumb, but we're not stupid. We're like, well, why build it out for you guys? We'll build it out for ourselves. So we kind of developed a partner strategy in legal form to make acquisitions to bring on to our team, but then kind of Higmatize them, get them doing business the way we do in business. And so our organic growth adds a lot of employees, but so does our partnership strategy. So when, you know, when I started, we were kind of one office, 12 employees right here in one city, Fort Worth, Texas. And today we have, I think, about 87 offices. Right. Spread over 15 states, and I'm going to just I'll use 2,500. Somebody might correct me if I'm too high or too low, but that's probably a good ballpark.
Do you ever think back to the 86, 89 days and look at it now, and what does that make you feel like if you ever have those thoughts?
Oh, we think about it all the time, and I say we because many of us when I came to Hig and really our home for Higginbotham from 86. To really 97 when we moved our current location, part of the business did, and then the balance of the team moved later. But it was Bailey Street, so we were right there on the corner of Bristol and Bailey. And so we always, when we all talk, you know, at the water cooler, it's always like, back to the Bailey days. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we and I will tell you, that's the thing. Sometimes I think some of our smaller competitors like to throw stones at us, but you know, we were named very wonderful accolade. We've been named best place to work a lot, not only in terms of local markets, but the state of Texas and even on a national scope. And one of my colleagues in the interview at the time, we've grown since this interview, and it wasn't that long ago, but his comment was, and I think this holds true to culturally what we try to preserve. He said, even though, and at this interview, we had 1,000 employees, so we've doubled plus that, but he said he was number 30. Coming into Higginbotham. He said, even though we have 1,000 employees, I still feel like we're a 30-person company. And what that means to me is we've got 2,500 employees, and because of our size, we have all the resources to work very much on a global basis, leverage in our single source model, but we still can be very local. And that's really what we are. Every one of our offices are in communities where we can be high touch. Yep. And I think in the world that we're in, you know, not that we're not digital and we don't have some incredible technologies that we leverage with our client base and our employees, but being local, I think, I think in our industry, you either have to subscribe to the theory that you're kind of an order taker, or you really subscribe through your people business. And I take it a step further. We're a people business, and we're really all about relationships.
Absolutely.
And so we've tried to build our footprint in parts of the country where relationships really do matter.
Yes.
And obviously starting in Texas with, you know, Texas roots, it's kind of what permeates as we expand outside of the footprint of Texas.
So much so that you've built this company with your employees to the largest independent insurance agency in the state of Texas and 20th in the country. Still the numbers?
Yes. Right. Yeah. And we,
is your goal well, still to keep going?
I mean, I would tell you, you know, our goal isn't to be the biggest. We really focused on more being the best. Mm-hmm. And I think because we focused on being the best, we've actually gotten quite large. I mean, most people don't realize this, but if you look at the independent agency system, there's approximately 35,000 independent agents and brokers in the country. And many of them that are larger than us have a full national footprint where we're only in the lower part of the U.S. So if they let me cheat and say, well, if I was in all across the country, I'd actually be bigger than you guys. But it's really not about that. It's, I always say everything in our lens ties back to our mission, vision, and values. You know, our mission says we want to exceed expectations of our constituencies, which are our employees, our trading partners, our certainly our clients and our communities, mm-hmm. our mission, our vision statement says we just want to be best for all of them. And then our value statement says we want to be family to our employees, we want to be complete advocates for our clients, partners with our carriers, and then generous to our communities. And so, you know, nowhere in that obviously says we want to be the biggest. Mm-hmm. It's just been, well, you know, it's funny. We looked up in 07. We were the largest firm in North Texas. I don't know when we became the largest in Texas. And, you know, one day if we become the largest in the country, great. But the things that matter to me, and I know my partners, is more about, you know, having great retention of our clients, great retention of our employees, you know, really being, fulfilling our mission to be generous to our communities. Sure. And being, you know, in our industry, you know, the reason why, you know, our insurance companies, some people refer to them as vendors or just the carriers, but we really want to be partners. And kind of back to that Southern hospitality, we've learned through the years, if you treat them well, it's what my grandmother taught me, right? Rusty, you treat people with kindness, you're going to get a lot more in return than if you, you know, strong arm them. And I can't tell you, JW, how many times we, on behalf of our clients, have been able to take what's a really tough situation, and because we've got great relationships with our insurance companies, get things done that nobody else gets done. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally. And that's, you know, so that has helped us grow, sure, a lot. It's helped us keep some incredible employees, mm-hmm. helped us keep some incredible clients, helped us land some amazing, mm-hmm. new clients. But, you know, it's, I always say it's a three-legged stool. It's kind of us. It's the insurance company, you know, mm-hmm. team, and it's always our client. And it, what the magic is, how do you keep, mm-hmm. all that working well and in harmony? Right. So anyhow,
well, we're celebrating the 75th birthday of Higginbotham. You've been at the helm for more than half of that. From then till now, can you talk about any of the major struggles that you've overcome throughout that time? I mean, everybody running a business in this world takes a lot of work, a lot of efforts, and a lot of failures in some regards. Certainly, you've seen your share of struggles and hurdles you've overcome. Is there anything you could share with us?
You know, it's funny. I used to say, and it's almost true, I'm hoping when 2030 rolls around, I'll be able to pass the baton to somebody else, because if I just follow my history with Higginbotham on every even decade, so think 1990, mm-hmm. think 2000, think 2010, think 2020, my oh my, there's no rule book to explain how you get through this, and I'll go through them quickly. So we buy the business in 89. In 1990, we look up and we are losing our riches. I mean, we it's like what you see often, a company that had no debt all of a sudden has debt. People, you know, we were pretty comfortable as an organization because we were a successful business. Mm-hmm. But now we have debt, and now, you know, you kind of had to carry your weight, right? Mm-hmm. And so we had to make some really hard decisions to right size our expenses. And fortunately we did, and we lost nobody. For us, it wasn't a function of let's go put a bullet in a lot of people. That's never been my leadership style. I've always been a fan of let's grow the top line, everything. If grow the top line and build it as it comes versus building it and hope it comes, mm-hmm. has always been my strategy. And so 90 was we were small and tiny, but a very challenging year. And what was even more comical is I went to Bill Stroud and I go, oh my gosh, we're going to have to do boom, boom, and boom. And he's like, well, it's your business now. You figured it out. So, you know, at a young age, you had to grow up quickly. Mm-hmm. Roll the clock forward. You know, in 2000, we saw the dot-com boom, but yep. we also saw a horrific dot-com bust. And we had a web business that we were involved in, and a lot of really tough times in and around that. But, you know, thanks to the team, and I think some of the competitive spirit that I've just, you know, either I was born with or have had to, because of my you know, informative years, had to capture. I was able to kind of lead the charge through that. You know, 2010, I mean, you know, the financial crisis hit in 08, and really things kind of went 08. You know, the market hit an all-time low March of 09, and really 2010, it was a booger bear. And of course, I left out the, you know, I remember like it was yesterday, we were in our building we're in today when 9/11 hit. Yes. And, you know, I was on the on the phone with Michael Parks's wife, and she's like, oh my gosh, what do we do? And I said, I don't know, but you need to go pick your kids up and, you know, take shelter. And I remember bringing everybody in the atrium and saying, having one of our, he's deceased now, God rest his soul, but Morgan Woodruff, you know, say a prayer,
yeah.
and try to calm everybody's nerves, because, you know, they were bombing, you know, things that were, you know, related to the military, and right next to us, yeah. we had a government office. And so, mm-hmm. you know, the just not panicking and mm-hmm. just trying to be calm, but not knowing, well, last time this happened, here's what you do. So certainly 10 was an interesting time because of the hope, and it rebounded from the right. financial crisis. And then, of course, whoever knew the word COVID-19, right? And so what an interesting day that was. You know, we were, I remember this thing all of a sudden became very real. And again, I did what I always did. I don't think I always have all the right answers. And so I quickly formed what we called the COVID-19 task force and said, how do we, you know, we don't have a rule book here, boys and girls, so we're going to have to figure this thing out. So long story short, I'm sure there's been a zillion others that anywhere in between, but you know, what I think I learned in 90 was you don't give up. What I learned in 10 is you don't give up, or in 2000, you don't give up. Same thing in 10 and same thing in 20. Mm-hmm. And I tried to, you know, now that I'm older, again, only 40, but now that I'm older, I've tried to really impress
upon. Our
audience
is laughing.
Yeah. Try to impress upon our teammates that, you know, guys, this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, nothing's ever guaranteed in life. This too shall pass. If you every day just try to do the right thing, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And so, you know, kind of a comical sidebar, Bill Stroud, one of his favorite sayings always was, he's like, Rusty, God takes care of children and idiots. Aren't you glad we're idiots? And so, you know, I can't help but when these tough times occur and then we find our way out of them, mm-hmm. I just hear him in my ear making that little comment. So
you mentioned Bill Stroud several times. I know there's a few more, but could you tell, are there any, you have heroes in your life? Or I know you had Bill as a mentor and some of these people throughout their insurance upbringing and even now, but anybody other than an insurance man or a businessman that was ever your hero?
Yeah, well, yeah, of course, I didn't get to spend as many years as I wish I could have, but my dad, clearly a great hero. I was blessed beyond words to have incredible grandparents, and it was kind of funny. I tease and jest with my family all the time because upon my grandfather Reed's passing and upon my grandmother or grandfather Jurgens, which was my mother's dad's passing, they both told their respective wives, don't worry, Rusty will handle everything. So I guess they for some reason thought I make things okay. So they were great people. Then of course, you know, Molly's dad is, you know, get emotional, but great guy.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And I know this man, I have to agree with you for sure.
So big dad, you know, it's, you just feel blessed in life, and not everybody gets this opportunity, but, you know, met him in 1981. And of course, you know, he played football at Auburn, as did Molly's brother play football at North Texas under Hayden Fry. In my first meeting with him, you know, I'm just young preppy guy coming in from North Texas, and I'm calling on his daughter and calling on Charlie, little Charlie's sister. Mm-hmm. And first time I met him, I basically was welcomed with grunts like, you know, and I knew I'd captured the respect of him when I was leaving. So when I got my first job at American General in Houston, I had Molly with me and my mother, and we were going to drive down to Houston. And as we were pulling out of the driveway, I hear this, hey, Russ. And he's a big man. We call him Big Dad for a reason. You know him. So you know what I'm talking about. And I roll down the window, and he reaches in the car and kisses me on the cheek. That was it. Not leaning over to Molly, and I go, well, I guess he likes me now. So but he's great. He's been a great dad, not just father-in-law, as is his wife, Sissy, to me. And more importantly, you know, you always know the impact people have on you, because my kids, he's an integral part of their lives as I am an integral part of their lives. So, you know, his grandchildren and really anybody he touches, mm-hmm. he's a very special man. I've been very blessed to have him in my life.
Thank you for sharing. That's fantastic. Yeah. A little bit different subject, but you've grown so much over the years. And I know you've been off at people that called and asked wanting to buy your business. Hey, you should join up. We should merge, all the things that happen during the course of a business's life. How do you stay independent all these years? How do you not go after the allure of the big public prize, perhaps, or I assume big companies have asked to buy you over the years. What is it about you and the company that makes you want to stay private?
I do think, you know, the thing that's been so great for us, and I think this is great for our employees and it's great for our clients and great for our carriers and our communities, is, you know, we answer to our shareholders, yes, but our shareholders are us, mm-hmm. right? And we've been very fortunate. We've had a wildly successful run, much greater than any of us ever envisioned. And we've set up our, you know, we run a tight ship. You know, we've always run a very conservative operation, and it's allowed us to be profitable, and that profitability has allowed us to make distributions to our shareholders. And so oftentimes, you know, you have to sell your business because you're not able to get liquidity. And many people, they build a business and it's time to ring the bell and get that liquidity. Mm-hmm. And in our case, we've kind of solved for that. It's literally an 07 forward. And then the other thing I would tell you is, you know, you have to sell your business when you don't really build backfill of leadership. And we've got, much like Bill Stroud did with me, I kind of took a chapter out of his book, and I've done the same. I mean, many of the young folks in our organizations have tremendous responsibilities, and they've done incredible jobs. So, you know, I say this all the time. My hope is that Higginbotham truly is a legacy asset. That, you know, 75 years from now, it won't be you and it won't be me, mm-hmm. but it might be your successor and be my successor hosting this interview, because we've, you know, not to steal somebody else's tagline, but we've built Higginbotham to last. Right. And we've recognized the importance of all the constituencies in our business, what that really means and entails. And I'll tell you, it's harder to do it that way than just get to a certain point, ring the bell, and say we all won. But I think, you know, thus far our journey is, you know, I always tell people it's a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And I kind of personally feel we hadn't even passed the 5K marker. So I think we got a great future ahead of us. And I feel blessed to be at the helm, and I feel blessed mm-hmm. having great partners helping me steer the ship.
You've won multiple awards over the years. You know, your company itself, you know, you're an Insurance Business America Hall of Fame, one of the most admired CEOs by Dallas Business Journal. Fort Chamber of Commerce has given you an Excellence in Leadership Award, one of the most innovated agents in America, you know, and one particular one, National Multiple Sclerosis Society Funding Hall of Fame. That one caught my attention. The other things, I think we all can agree that they're warranted, and you've done a wonderful job. You give back to the community like none other. What is the Multiple Sclerosis Society? Why is that in your life?
So, great question. So, early on, and you know, we now have, of course, the Higginbotham Community Fund. But early on, one of my, still to date, a dear friend and a great client was a guy named David Miner, and he at the time had Miner's Lawn Care.
Right.
And so great friend. Talk about a mentor. I mean, he definitely made me respect the fact that you better bring the best solution to the table for a client. Mm-hmm. And he reminded that not only annually but frequently. But David was also a great individual in the sense that here had been a community given to him and his family the opportunity to build a great business, and it rewarded him. It rightfully so, very, very well. And so he was on the board of Multiple Sclerosis. He was actually the board chair. And I had shared with him I'd really wanted to get more involved at a philanthropic level. Just I kind of was wired like that. You can't just build a business, hence taking from the community. You need to give back. And he said, Rusty, this is a great opportunity. So I got involved with MS, got on the board. They host the first event I kind of got involved in was what they called the Jiggling Gelatin Slide. And I had the good fortune of a friend of mine, Dave Craddock, known as Kid Craddock of the radio. He had his radio show that was booming. Yeah. So he was my MC for the event. And then for anybody out there that's a Barney fan, one of our dear, dear friends owned a Levine's department store. And so Damon King's daughter, Lauren King, was on the Barney show. And so she agreed to be our celebrity guest to, you know, basically slide down in this vat of a Jell-O. And so we raised a lot of money for MS. Well, then the next thing, they came to me and said, what else do you think you would like to do? And so we kind of constructed what we called the MS Rodeo and Concert. And so a gentleman in town, a guy named Gary McKinney, who's passed away now, but he owned McKinney Toyota, had multiple sclerosis. And he said, I think I can get the North Texas Toyota dealers to not only contribute a truck to auction off, but I think we'll make a big blast out of this. We'll come in as a large sponsor. And so we basically put on, thanks to Philip Schutz, who helped do the PRCA rodeo. And then thanks to my dear friend, Gary Osier, we hired Lori Morgan, who at that time was on fire. And by the way, she was dating Troy Aikman, who's of course a Super Bowl, you know, winner. And it just was that perfect storm. So we did basically a series of four of these and raised a tremendous amount of money for MS. And so hence they gave me that.
That's great. So, if you're listening, you probably can tell that this guy's got a lot on his plate. Let's throw on this. You sit on several boards, Rusty. You're on the All Saints Episcopal School Board, Casa Manana Board, Davey O'Brien Board. Several, I think, maybe have dropped off, but tell me if I'm wrong. But YPO, the World Presidents Organization, TCU's Board of Trustees, the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, which is a lot in itself. And then I see one here, Goosehead. Goosehead happens to be in this building. This is another insurance agency. Could I ask about these guys?
Yeah, absolutely. They're, by the way, a great success story. Mark and Robin Jones are the founders of this business, and it's kind of in our purview, but not really. They kind of have built a business that's very technically connected. Where they took advantage of what I'll call the captive insurance space. So if you think of the likes of the Allstate, State Farms, and Farmers, where you basically work for them, they saw, because Robin, the wife, saw that she tried to do closings because she was in the mortgage banking industry and could never get a bindable policy at closing, and that resulted in a delay of closing, which sometimes means you didn't get it closed, right? And so Mark, very brilliant guy, Harvard MBA, and was a bank consultant, and they have six children, and I'm sure there was some discussion at the dinner table, you need to get off the road and stay home. So he retired and said, let me think if I can build a business model to solve for this. So they've built this incredible national footprint where they basically serve the mortgage lending industry to provide homeowners at closing, and they've got a phenomenal business that does that. Well, they also kind of figured out that because State Farm is both a sales arm, but it's also the insurance company. Well, if you're with State Farm and you're in Fort Worth, Texas, and you get obliterated by one of our hailstorms, you might not be able to write, you know, homeowners anymore. So you need a multi-carrier platform.
Right.
And so they also figured out, hey, we can build a franchise with this. So I felt very honored and blessed to be invited to serve on their board. And for me, I always look at, and you talk about all these boards, I always look at boards as an opportunity for me really for professional development. It also serves as an opportunity for me to kind of see how other people do it. And maybe we can take some of those things and apply it to our business. Mm-hmm. And so, but they're a great family that owns it, and they took it public. And so, you know, not that we're on a path to go public, mm-hmm. but it's nice to see how a public company is run and operated and on the inside. And should that ever happen in our world, at least I can have a little view of what that looks like.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Do you have much free time?
I guess the good news, bad news is I'm not a golfer, and I'm not a, I enjoy the outdoors, but I'm not a huge hunter. And so my free time kind of is, you know, I work at Higginbotham, I support, and I go all in on any of the nonprofits or different boards I entertain. And then, of course, as you probably surmise, I'm a big family guy. So we've been blessed to have three wonderful children, Sainty, of course, who's married to Eric. And they have two kids, Molly Morgan and little Mick. And then, of course, my son Jake is married to Emily, his college sweetheart. And they have little Janie. So, by the way, Molly Morgan's three, Mick's one, and Janie's one. And then Charlie, you know, our little TCU football player, he's married to sweet Michelle. And they have little JR, who's one. So a lot of my spare time is spent hanging out with them.
That is wonderful. The future of HIG or the future of the insurance world, as we get closer to the end of this interview, do you see, I know your model's not going to change necessarily, but it's at some point you're going to pass the baton. But does the future of the insurance world continue in the same trajectory, or is there, do you see any vast changes with the world turning like it is?
Yeah, no, I think it, you know, we won't be identical to what we look like today. No ifs, ands, or buts. But I do think it's matter of fact, you know, JW, it's funny. When you go to colleges and universities, it's normally the longest line for employment is whatever is the next hot topic, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and you can think about what that was when you went to school. I can think about what it was when I went to school. I can think what it was like when my adult children went to school, colleges. And, you know, it's interesting. Insurance has always been there. And when you kind of peel back the covers and you look at the industry, it's an incredible industry. Like all industries, though, you've got to adapt to change and modify. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you another thing that why I love having youth in our organization is you know, they help also open your eyes to, hey, it's not just that way. You need to be thinking about it this way also. And so, you know, I will tell you that we're going to become much more data driven in our industry. And thank goodness we're an industry that's been built on a lot of old legacy systems. Mm-hmm. And so thank goodness for technologies like a Snowflake and others where you can build data lakes and it doesn't matter where the data was, you can bring it in and then slice it and dice it for your utilization. And so I can see us becoming very, I won't say data, purely data dependent, because I think God gave us all this for a reason, and you need to be able to look at data and then figure out now what I do with that data. Mm-hmm. But no, I think our industry is very vibrant. I think it's a great place to work and literally spend a career. And we'll have to adapt and change, et cetera. But I think we'll be there at the long haul as well.
Nice. One might say, based on your resume, that you knew what you wanted to do from an early age. And I don't know many people in my life that I've met, but that's pretty phenomenal in itself. From when you were learning the business in college, I think in North Texas, you were studying insurance and business. And here we are all these years later, and you've done it, man. You've run a business for so many years. Staying in your trajectory from the get-go is a hard thing to do, and I commend you for that.
Well, I'll give you a quick little secret, though. I really, a little of this probably was like most kids. You don't know what you want to do when you graduate from high school. And most don't know that candidly when they graduate from college. And so my dad's passing, I had no idea what I was going to do. I was literally lost for a while. So I decided I was going to go into pre-med and become a pediatrician.
Okay.
But I met this thing called organic chemistry, and fortunately the dean of the biology department, which was over pre-med, pointed across the courtyard and said, "You need to go see Dr. Thornton over there." Mm-hmm. And so fortunately he guided me down the business path, and insurance, I guess, since my dad and my grandfather both were in that industry, I thought, well, that might be a path I should follow.
Yes,
it all worked out
beautiful. Any regrets over your career?
No, not at all. You know, I really don't. I've always tried to not be a guy that just walk or talks the talk, but walk the walk. And I really don't have any regrets, to be honest with you.
You've met some really interesting folks over your life, people that would call celebrities, musicians, sports people. Any particular favorites in during your life?
Boy, I don't know. I've met a lot of, thanks to my kids, you know, obviously my daughter and son-in-law are in the entertainment industry. So they've opened some incredible doors. And actually when I was on the, I was board chair at Casa Mignana, and we had a opportunity to meet some really fascinating people kind of along the way. And I've always had this incredible fascination with musician. My high school buddies will tell you we had what we called Rusty and the Razor. So I probably, that was my next question. Yeah. I would never make it in that industry. So thank God insurance did come along. But I've always been fascinated with talent, and I've had a chance, you know, musical talent. And that's truly from Broadway to, folks that are live on stage. I've had a chance multiple times now to meet a guy like a Lionel Richie, and what's just incredible. And it just, you figure out why they're so good at what they do. Every time you meet him, it's like you're the only person in the room. And we all have friends that, you know, you're here, but they're looking at everybody else. They don't really care that you're right there, mm-hmm. right? And this guy, man, he hones in. He's almost kind of nerve-wracking because he's really talking to you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, he's pretty famous. And what's incredible is here's a guy that's, you know, been at it for, God, probably 50 years. He's 73 or so now, and he's, you know, he's still got it. So I've had a chance to meet him. I had a chance one time to have lunch with George W. Bush, and just it was kind of incredible because here I am meeting with the President of the United States, and he was, you know, having fun with the table next to us because they weren't paying attention. So every time they weren't paying attention, he'd wad up a piece of paper and throw it at people. You know, so it's nice to know that they have that side to them, yeah. The human side,
surely,
you know, if you will. And then have met some wonderful coaches along the way too, some great baseball players. So it's been fun. I like that kind of stuff. My wife Molly likes to refer to me as fanboy. So and of course with Eric, you know, meeting, you know, Taylor Sheridan, just what words can't even describe how unbelievably talented that guy is. Mm-hmm. So been really, really cool.
Very cool. About this Rusty and the Razors bit since you brought it up, is it still ongoing? Is Roxanne still in the repertoire?
Well, Roxanne, you know, it made a little appearance. My wife had a little birthday party, as you know, and he made a little appearance there. So for those that don't know, if there's ever a chance, a particular group, Top, who, by the way, I first hired back when we did the MS Rodeo in concert. We hired them then, and when Molly and I celebrated our first 40th birthday, we hired him then, and he's just been part of our family for a long time. He's just been very generous to let me come up and sing a song or two with him.
That's great.
Yeah, if I get that opportunity, I always, of course, have to take advantage of it.
Yes, sir. Well, I've appreciated the time, Rusty, for sure. It's a phenomenal story. You're a hell of a guy, and I appreciate that. You've been a good friend to me and to a lot of people. You always helping people. The last question we like to ask our guests, aside from family, no wife, kids, grandkids, none of that stuff, do you have a best day of your whole life?
Golly, the best day of my whole life? Oh, I don't know. I to be brutally honest with you, I've had some incredible days of my life. You know, because as I mentioned before, you know, my quiet time, if you will, spent with family. So the very memorable moments all coincide with them. So I don't know. I just feel as a human being, I've been real, you know, I've had certainly some tragedy along the way and, you know, being part of a broken family along the way. But I think that, you know, all in all, it's been pretty darn good gig.
Imagine your father that you spoke of would be pretty proud of what you've done. It's and I know he's left a long time ago, but if he was anything like you, Rusty, he's probably a good guy. So
thank you
for being here. It's been a pleasure, and I've always enjoyed you. So thank you, Rusty Reed. Thank you for watching Fortitude. Rusty Reed from Higginbotham, 75th anniversary. Happy birthday.
Thank you, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Roxo Media House.